Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 371 of the podcast. And it's Friday, the 13th of April, 2018, as I record this. So today I have an interview with Emily Thompson from the Being Boss podcast on creative entrepreneurship and how she co-wrote her new book, Being Boss, Take Control of Your Work and Live Life on Your Own Terms. Now, I love the Being Boss podcast, and many of you have actually emailed me to say, could I have Emily and or Kathleen on the show? So really excited to have Emily on today. And the book is out. So if you would like some help with your creative business, I hope you find the interview and the book inspirational and also practical. So that is coming up. And this is a short introduction today as I am recovering from the craziness of London Book Fair. It was a great fair and I always enjoy going, but this introvert did spend the entire day yesterday in bed with a migraine brought on by too much stimulation. Like, whoa, if any of you have been to these book fairs, they are very, very intense in terms of people. And I always explain it as, you know, as readers, readers and authors, we love books, right? So when there is a book or a bookstore or a book cover, our eyes are drawn to it. So if you walk past a bookstore, your eyes are drawn towards the books. Now, what happens at the book fair is every single stall, and there are hundreds of them, are covered in book covers. So unless you walk around with your eyes focused on the ground, your eyes are just darting between book covers and, you know, being attracted to some and glossing over others. But there is this constant stimulation. So it's a really interesting environment. But I went to some great sessions, including the Blockchain for Books session launched by the Alliance of Independent Authors, and also a really interesting session by Wattpad and China Literature on mobile reading and monetization of mobile reading, which I found fascinating. So I also interviewed a number of indies, and so I've got some information on, well, some thoughts on the biggest challenges for authors and what people are doing to reach those or meet those challenges. So that will be coming up next week. So I'll do a whole show next week on that. I am now back into editing How to Write Nonfiction, and I am getting the pre-order up as soon as I finish recording this. So when the show goes out, there will be a pre-order for How to Write Nonfiction, and that will be ebook only. So all the links will be on my website, thecreativepen.com/books. All the links will be there, but also on the ebook stores. I will also do the print pre-order at some point, but basically I'm making it for the end of May 2018. So that I can try and get the audiobook done and also the online course version. So I'm really trying to get simultaneous release of all formats for this one. Not sure whether I'll be able to do it, but I'm going to give it a go. So, I mean, the difficult thing with audio is you can't record the audio until you've finished editing the book and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, if you are intending to buy the ebook, and many of you have been emailing me and tweeting and saying, please get on with it, then I would really appreciate a pre-order on whichever store you prefer. The pre-orders make a real difference, particularly with the merchandising possibilities, and really help sort of judge the interest in the book. So that will be up now, How to Write Nonfiction, soon to be out. Okay, so thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments on the week. Remember, you can always let me know what you're doing while you're listening to the show. Tweet me at The Creative Pen, or leave a comment on the blog. Those are the preferred ways. Jules Horn was in the car cheering at the podcast with Jane Friedman. This one particularly chimed, and hooray that Jane senses a shift in how MFAs are acknowledging the realities of earning a living. Feel like a solitary tub thumper most of the time. Have recommended her book for the professional practice element of our course. Also a smile about literary citizenship. And yeah, I'd never heard of literary citizenship, so that was fascinating. Amy Cesari says, great episode with Jane. I cracked up
as I was driving along wearing a skeleton sweatshirt when you mentioned skull collections, and Amy sent me pictures of her skulls. So thank you, everyone. Thanks, Amy. And to everyone who sent me skull pictures, I love them. And hello to all the vanilla goths in the audience. John Van Sloten, this is hilarious, says, just had a conversion experience watching the interview with Scott Baker on Dictation. Feels natural for a preacher. Going to try it for the last five chapters of my book, Circumvent the Inner Critic That's Been Paralyzing Me Lately. So that was good. That's an older episode with Scott Baker. So it's always good to hear that people are listening to the backlist of the podcast. Hello to Wynne Kelly Charles, who says, I listen to your podcast while eating breakfast Mondays or Tuesdays. And just a couple more. Troy Francis says, great interview. I have a creative writing MA from a good UK university, but I self-publish non-fiction. For me, it was about changing my opinion about what proper writing is. So, and I really love that. And I think I have this conversation about quality so often with people. You know, people go, oh, but aren't all these self-published books not high quality? And I'm like, you have to define quality for yourself. What is one person's amazing book is another person's rubbish. So it's up to us as authors to chase after the highest quality that we believe is appropriate. And for me, that's using professional editors, professional cover designers. And then it's also up to the reader to determine what they want to read. So many people would say that a Pulitzer Prize winning novel is higher quality than a, action adventure thriller. But as per the discussion I had recently around No Country for Old Men versus Thor Ragnarok, what type of experience is more fun for the reader? So I think quality is always between you, the creator, and also your audience. So a very complicated discussion there. Julia Gandrud said, I love it that you gave me permission to define reading as play. Thank you. And a number of you have commented on that play show that I did with Charlie Hone. Clearly, I'm not the only one who struggles with the idea of play. And then finally, Casey Beth says, absolutely wonderful podcast, Joanna and Jane. I'm excited to meet you both at the Indie Author Conference in Philadelphia. And yes, so I mentioned that last time, but I am speaking in Philadelphia in November at the Book Baby Conference with Jane Friedman and a number of other speakers. You can check it out at indieauthorcon.com. So short for Indie Author Conference, just so we're clear, .com. Okay, so today's show is sponsored by Draft Digital, and I will play a word from the sultry voice of Kevin Tomlinson in a minute. I can't even do a good impression of Kevin. Thanks to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. Thanks to new patrons, Danielle A. Vincent, Sianna Stewart, or Kiana, it's a lovely name, Felicia Irene, Samantha Charlton and RB Young. And I really do appreciate your support on Patreon. It means so much to me. Seriously, you guys, it means a lot. It shows me that you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And of course, you can support the show with just a couple of dollars a month or a few more dollars a month if you like. And you'll get the extra monthly Q&A audio, which I guess I'll have to do for April pretty soon. And of course, you get the whole backlist too. So if you can't get enough of my voice, you can have loads more by sponsoring the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/ The Creative Pen. Right, here's a word from our sponsor, and then we'll get on with the interview.
Hi, this is Kevin Tomlinson with Draft Digital, bringing you DDD Smart Author Tip number 5. If you're already using DDD's Universal Book Links, you know just how easy it is to send readers to everywhere your books are sold online with a single click. Now we're taking that to the next level and improving your discoverability with DDD Book Tabs. Book Tabs are sleek, attractive, well-designed book product pages that display your book's cover and description, as well as a brief author bio and photo, and best of all, a single buy now button that lets readers, buy now from any book retailer they prefer. Book tabs are perfect for use with online ads, social media posts, and emails, and if you're using D2D author pages, your book tabs are displayed in attractive carousels organized by series. If you're already using D2D for distribution or you're using Universal Book Links at bookstoread.com, good news, you already have book tabs of your very own. Now, wasn't that easy? And if you'd like to reach the widest possible audience, be sure to use Drafted Digital's free ebook distribution to major online retailers worldwide, including Apple iBooks, Kobo, Tolino, and more. Start reaching a bigger audience now. Convert your manuscript, distribute it online, and get the support you need the whole way at draftedigital.com/pen.
Today, I'm here with Emily Thompson. Hi, Emily.
Hi, Joanna. Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Emily helps creative entrepreneurs build online businesses. She provides guidance and courses at Indie Shopography and is the co-host of the fantastic Being Boss podcast and community with Kathleen Shannon. Emily and Kathleen are also the co-authors of Being Boss, Take Control of Your Work and Live Life on Your Own Terms, which we're talking about today. New book. Awesome book. So, Emily, just start by telling us a bit more about your creative background and how you got into writing.
Sure. My creative background is long and it's been an arduous journey for sure. But it's also been a whole lot of fun. I've been creating my entire life. I was the kid who was doing like really crafty things as a kid and like handing it off to other people and giving it as gifts, even trying to selling it a time or two. And I ended up going through school with like traditional educational goals. I got a degree in geography, but all during school, I was doing creative things or business things. I actually owned my first business while I was in college. I also started my second business while I was in college. I was making and selling jewelry on Etsy as just sort of a fun side project to keep me out of my books, I guess, because books. I love books. But so I was doing some creative business things. After I graduated, I ended up starting to design websites for other creative entrepreneurs. So that's how I found myself in the realm of helping other creatives start business. And it was a ton of fun. It started out with me just thinking I was going to build websites. But if anyone out there builds websites for businesses, especially, you know that you're not just building websites. Like in a way, you're kind of responsible for helping them figure out their business model because it is the tool with which they will function as a business. And so I found myself really digging into creative businesses, how it is that they found clients, how it is that they positioned themselves or branded themselves, how it was that they did the work that they did and paired that with running the business that they were running to do the work that they wanted to do. So I spent almost a decade doing that. And in the middle of that, I met my podcast co-host and friend, Kathleen, who was also beginning her journey as a creative entrepreneur. And we became what we call business besties. So we were hanging out online. We were totally like online friends. And we were getting together on Skype once a month to talk about our businesses and talk about life as creative entrepreneurs and how it was that we were balancing the two or dealing with difficult clients or how we were pricing ourselves. We were masterminding together, though we didn't really think of it like that. We were just showing up to share what was happening in our businesses. And it was in those conversations where Kathleen and I, years ago, got really vulnerable with the fact that we both envisioned ourselves writing books. Like we didn't know what they would be. We had no idea like where they would take us or at what point it would make sense for us to do so. But we knew that at some point, we wanted to write a book. And at that point, it was separate. We were going to write separate books, not a book together. And then a couple of years into our relationship, I had the great idea to start a podcast because the conversations that Kathleen and I were having about life and work as creative entrepreneurs was so valuable to the two of us that I felt that they could be valuable to other people. And if they could be valuable to others, why not give it a go and see if other people liked it? So we started the Being Boss podcast. We launched the first episode in January of 2015. And it took off in a way that neither of us anticipated that it would. We just did it to make something together. We wanted to do a project together, to make something together, and to make something that wasn't dictated by clients. You know, for years we had been working for clients, her as a graphic designer and branding expert, and me as a web designer and online business expert. And we just wanted to do something that didn't have anybody's hands in it except for our own. And it ended up taking off really quickly. And it really hit a chord with, you know, our kinds of people, the people who were working and living the exact same ways we were as photographers or as coaches or as interior designers. And we've even attracted some real estate agents and lawyers, like people who want to do the work that they love doing, but they want to do it in a non-traditional way. And so it was over the course of having, you know, years and years of conversations together and then on the podcast between ourselves, but also with experts in the field of entrepreneurship or, you know, individual professions or just in like living and working like a boss, that we started seeing these really common threads of content. There were things that just showed up for every single boss that we talked to. And we saw the chapters of a book coming to light out of the content that we were already creating and sharing on our podcast. And so probably about 2 years into our podcast, we decided that it was probably time to turn the content we were sharing into a book. And we didn't proactively start going at, you know, figuring that out yet. We just knew it was an idea that we had and someday it would happen.
And thus it has. And we'll come back to the writing. But I do want to talk about the word boss. And it's interesting because I found your podcast. I can't remember how I found it because I wouldn't have searched for boss. Because in Britain, like a boss is like a negative kind of word. Whereas in America, like girl boss, and like it's become quite a positive word, like it means a lot. But I also, like, I work for myself and I have a really hard boss. Like, my boss makes me work really hard. So I wondered, talk about the word boss and why you chose that as part of the brand for the book, for the podcast, for your community, and why it's so positive, I guess.
Sure. Well, I mean, in America, it definitely has like two sides for sure. We're like, there has grown a very large amount of empowerment behind the word boss. But we also still have the connotation of like a nasty boss that you work for, even like a mob boss who's going to, like, you know, make you go swimming with the fishies or whatever. Like, there are still some negative connotations to it for sure. But whenever we chose it, and it's totally a buzzword, and it's especially as we were writing the book and after we were writing the book, we were like, can we never say the word boss again? Like, we feel like we say it all the time. And not as a joke, it's just become so much a part of our vernacular. Like, it just has replaced so many words. But regardless, for us, it was this idea of positioning ourselves as experts in working for yourself. In being boss and being your own boss and being the boss of your own life and work and sort of taking control of what it is that you were creating, how it was that you were living. And so that was really the mindset with which we chose that word. And now we define being a boss as being someone who owns who they are, who knows what they want, and can actually make it happen. And that can go one of two ways. It can be very positive. It could also be very negative, for sure. But for us, the bosses that we're speaking to, or the way that we speak to boss, is that these are people who are going to leave the world in a better condition than they found it. They're here to make a positive impact, both on themselves, but also for their families and their community or the world at large. So this idea of like elevating the word boss into being something super positive and empowering, that's what we're here to do. And hopefully what that does is, you know, elevates the entire meaning of boss so that there are no longer nasty bosses or even mobster bosses or whatever it may be. But this idea that let's take something as like powerful as being a boss and just turn it into a positive thing.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I think I did find the show because So many, there's a lot of stuff for early entry business people. And then, you know, I was like, I need some people who are more immature in their business. And that's kind of, I think, how I found you guys. But one thing that's interesting in the book, you actually say, we don't believe everyone has what it takes to be boss. And this was, it is great, because for years I thought, oh, everyone can do this. And then I kind of realized that, why are people struggling? Why can't they just do this? So what do you think people need in order to make it as a full-time successful creative entrepreneur?
Sure. And I'll tell you too, I've also been super guilty of believing that just anyone can do this, where like, why wouldn't you want to just work for yourself? And, you know, all these things. But also, as I've grown and matured, I found that it really just isn't for anyone. And there are some very specific things that I and that we have found really make someone capable of doing what it is that we do. The first of those is a positive mindset. Like, you cannot be your own boss if you are a negative Nancy. Like, it's just not going, you're not going to get very far. Like, you have to be like unapologetically and almost like stubbornly positive and like believe in yourself and believe in your own capacity to do whatever it is that you're here to do. And if you don't have that, you can't do it. If there's ever like a month or two where I'm feeling down, I get really sad in the winter sometimes. Like, those are times when I'm not being as boss. Like, I'm not running my business as effectively and as efficiently as I could. And it is that mindset. It's the belief that you can absolutely do this. And if you don't have that, or if you ever waver in it more than, you know, a couple of days, then you are not going to succeed as someone who is really taking control in their work in the way that creative entrepreneurs do. So I think the first of them is a positive mindset and really believing that you can do whatever it is that you are here to do. And in a lot of ways on your own. Like, you have to believe that, like, you can have support systems for sure, but if worse comes to worse, you can still do this all by yourself. I mean, the second one of those is strong boundaries. And this is the one that I find most missing in what we call, and because they call themselves this, baby bosses, these people who are just beginning their journey as a creative entrepreneur or as an entrepreneur. These people tend to have very bad, if any, or unhealthy boundaries, where let's say they're letting clients text them on the weekend. One, why do they have your phone number so that they're texting you? And two, why don't you say nothing on the weekends? And then they'll reply. So like, that's just, you know, one very simple example. Or someone who will allow themselves to work really unhealthy hours, or those sorts of things. Like, you have to, one, know yourself, and two, put in boundaries to protect yourself so that you can be running at the optimal level. And so if you have unhealthy boundaries, that's where we get to that entrepreneur mindset, or this view of entrepreneurship, that it's like this unhealthy grind and hustle that you do no matter what it takes to get where you want to get to. And yes, you can do it that way, but I don't think that's the best way to do it. And it's certainly not the only way to do it. There are ways to, you know, find your own success without, you know, putting yourself in the ground along the way. So I think positive mindset, strong boundaries, and then healthy habits and routines that are going to set you up for success every single day, every single week, every single month. And this also goes back to that mindfulness of knowing what it is that you need to succeed, and practicing those things in your life in a way that makes you easy to go from point A to point B. A very popular example of this is a morning routine. So, you know, you waking up in the morning and having the set things that you do that will get you ready for your day. If you have a really bad morning routine, by lunchtime, you don't know where you're going to be. Are you going to be ready to get things going? Are you going to be completely scattered? Are you still laying in bed? Like, it's the morning routine that gets you going. And that's just one example of how you can take this like set of actions that you need to do to get you into a place to be completely productive and happy while doing it. It's taking that set of things and making them habits and routines in a way that you do them without thinking about them, that they get you ready to do whatever it is that you need to do. And they're just continually setting you up for success. And so those three things, they all come down to mindfulness, and they all come down to being really stubborn with your time, where you know what you need to do to succeed because you've defined success. You see the path along the way, and you're willing to take action. And I think all of those things also super comes down to responsibility, which is really hard to do for most of us. But it is the thing that you have to claim and you have to own and you have to practice, this responsibility for yourself every single day, this responsibility for you taking action and reaching your own goals, this responsibility for, you know, dealing with other people, or even if you grow a team, being responsible for those people, it's being responsible for the work that you do and the words that you say. It's complete and utter responsibility, but then you get whatever you want. So why not take it?
And
all of that.
Yeah. And I think that's really important. And it's interesting as well, because you talk about boundaries. I mean, most of the listeners won't work with clients because they're authors. But one thing that's really common in the writer community right now is writing more and more books, writing faster and faster. So I know you guys wouldn't want to be writing a book a month at this point, but there's plenty of people in my community who kind of aim for that. And I think, again, I was listening to you guys and you take December off, right? And I took December off last year because of what you guys said. And now I've scheduled next December off and ad infinitum. And I think this boundaries and responsibility for yourself is really important. So for example, respecting weekends is very, very hard when you're running your own business. But there is a difference.
But it's not. But I have to say, it's also really not. Once you put up that boundary and you experience a weekend where your business does not touch it, it is not a problem to go back or to not go back. Like, you'll be perfectly fine not working on the weekends.
But I guess many of the listeners too will have a full-time job. So there's a difference between someone who is trying to move into their own business and someone who has been running it for, say, 5-7 years, right?
For sure. For sure. But even then, it's setting up those boundaries. So for me, I'm also like working on a side hustle right now. So I totally see this, and I'm totally guilty of, like, I've broken my weekend boundary for a short period of time to get the side hustle off the ground. But a couple of things are in place. One of them is I know when that end point is. I know that I've broken my boundary for a set amount. I've created a boundary around my broken boundary. If I can even make it super meta like that. So, you know, I've said, you know, for the next 6 weeks, I'm open to working on the weekends, but I've also maintained a boundary where that does not count for Sunday evening. Sunday after lunch is like my quote unquote weekend, where I don't care what is happening. Nothing can touch me. Like, that will be my weekend and no work will find its way into it, even if I'm itching to pick up the laptop and do the thing. And that has made me sort of maintain some healthy relationships with the people that I work with, with the work that I'm doing, with myself, like all of these things. So it is just, you can break boundaries, you can build them and tear them down and replace them and all these things. The fact of the matter is that you have to be mindful enough to create them. You have to create them and you have to abide by them. You also have to communicate them. If you don't keep your own boundaries in check, neither will anyone else. Like, if you tell your team, for example, that, you know, I won't be emailing anybody after 5 p.m., but then, and so please don't email me after 5 p.m., but then you're emailing after 5 p.m., they're going to email you after 5 p.m. So, like, they'll take cues from you as to how important these boundaries are. So keeping them for yourself is super important, but also communicating them to other people. So for me, like, my no work on Sunday evenings, I've told everyone that I work with, like, I know we're hustling out some side hustles right now. We have lots of things to do, but know that my Sunday evening, you can text me all you want. You can hit me up in Slack and email me everything you can think of. You won't hear a peep out of me. And everyone respects it because it's so important for everyone and everything. And I've had a couple of people ask me, like, you know, do people respect you less whenever you set these boundaries and whenever you're so, like, bold around what it is that you need? And the answer is no. What I've found is in each and every case, people respect me more. And it also gives them a break as well.
Yeah, which is great. And I mean, you mentioned relationships there. And it's interesting because I work with my husband, as you do. You also, you and Kathleen run Being Boss. And I was listening to your end of year show, and you both have your own businesses. Then you have a business together, and now you're doing a side hustle thing. And you both, you know, have partners, you have children. I mean, you guys are busy. But what are your tips for collaborating and co-writing with a dear friend and also like your husband? Like, how do you manage business and those close relationships together?
Boundaries. It always, I think, goes back to boundaries a little bit. Like, for working with my life partner, for example, you know, we don't talk about dinner, or we don't talk about business at the dinner table. For example, where, you know, even if we both have like a million emails in like in our head and we need to talk about all the to-do lists or that crazy thing that person just said or whatever it may be, dinner table is a place where we're not talking about business. Mm. Like little things like that really helps us maintain a healthy like romantic relationship, as well as like giving us places where we talk about business. So, you know, we even work in the same office together.
Me like, too, with out, my husband. Right?
All the time, just chilling, cracking jokes, all the things. But we definitely have these places and these times where we talk about things or do things, and sort of creating those little boundaries around our lives in that way allows us both to know what to expect when. So there's no like guessing or overstepping those boundaries or whatever it may be. And it gives us the capacity to move through all of those things pretty fluidly and easily because we're both on the same page with all things. And that comes down to really open, consistent, constant communication. We're always talking about things, and that works, you know, with my life partner, David. But it also works with Kathleen at the podcast. So we're talking all the time about everything, easy, hard, doesn't matter what it is. We have to be very open communicators. And whenever it came to writing the book, at that point, we had done several things together. I mean, we had been business besties for a long time and had those ongoing conversations. We had started the podcast. We'd hosted a couple of vacations at that point. Every year we invite 75 of our listeners on vacation with us. We've done it in New Orleans a couple times and in Miami. So we'd hosted a couple of those. We had done several big projects together, and this was just a new one, but it was a different one because it was a really creative project. It wasn't just like tasking out and doing the things. It was like, we got to get into our creative zone at the right time and together and all of these things and make this work. And for us in that situation, it was about one, like not being very precious about anything, like really being super open about finding the writing situation that worked for us. The first 2 weeks of writing the book, we trashed it. Like, because we went at it in a way that didn't work. And we recognized that immediately, trashed it, and tried something else. And until we found something, until we found like a flow of working that worked well for both of us. And it was about communicating all along the way. Like, this isn't feeling great to me. You know, I feel like I'm not writing as well as I can. I feel like you're not writing as well as you can, whatever it may be. It was about finding the place where we both felt creative and competent and confident in writing before we could really move forward. So it took us a couple of weeks to really find that place and really being open to like discovering that process, because neither of us had ever written a book before, let alone written a book with someone else, which just added a whole new dynamic to the situation. Mm-hmm. So it was about finding the creative process and then supporting each other in it. So really making sure that, you know, because I'm the one who does most of the managing of the podcast business. So I'm the one managing the team and those sorts of things. So for me, it was being really conscious not to overload Kathleen with other tasks when I know we're about to go into like a long, you know, week or two of writing. So it was about supporting each other's creative process, and really making sure it was going to work for both of us, and then communicating super openly and effectively along the way. But also for us, it was all about having fun. And I'll tell you, we had a blast writing this book. It was the most fun either of us have ever had, like work or not work. We laughed so hard and like felt so good in like the creative work that we were doing. And we wrote it relatively quickly because we like totally found our flow and our jam like together and individually. We found a way that worked for both of us in so many ways. And I think that came from just being so open and willing to figure out the process along the way and then really tapping into it once we found what would work for us.
Mm. And just practically, did you write on like Google Docs or Scrivener or like how did you do that?
Sure. So we wrote in Google Docs and whenever we got started, we went through each chapter and we like hardcore outlined it. So we really knew each topic we would hit along the way. And then we divided them up. So we knew which sections I would be writing and which sections Kathleen would be writing. And then we got on our calendars and blocked out multiple, like 2 hour blocks a week, because we found that we could not write together for more than really about an hour and a half. We always padded in an extra 30 minutes because we were going to talk about something ridiculous for at least 30 minutes every day. So we would do these 2 hour blocks in the morning, because that's when we found that we were both a little more creative and open to writing. And we would do two to four, I guess, mornings a week, where we would actually get on to, we were using Zoom. We would get on Zoom together and on Google Docs. So we were face to face. So we were like writing basically in the same room with each other. We would open up a Google Doc because you can do live writing and live editing. And we would sit there kind of quietly and write the thing. And then we would switch and read each other's. Sometimes we would read our own out loud and sort of workshop it together. By the time that we handed in our quote unquote first draft, it was kind of like our fourth. And so it was super solid and super awesome because our writing process involved like so much back and forth and like review, because one piece bled into the next and it just made sense for us to write in that way. And it ended up giving us a really solid final product that made our editor's job super easy and our editing process super easy as well. So it was us getting together, sometimes like talking aloud. We found it was really helpful if one of us was getting stuck to just like stop typing and go, what I really want to say is blah, blah, blah. And then while like one of us is talking, the other one is actually typing it out. So like really getting really clear about what it is that we were saying and using each other to make the writing process not only enjoyable, but super effective in capturing what it was that we wanted to say.
Wow, I've never heard anyone co-write like that. That's crazy. I've co-written like, what, 7 books or something now? And that's really unusual. So good on you guys. That's fascinating. But I am interested also because both you and Kathleen are very visual and the book has a lot of quirky pictures, visual stuff. Now, and you're a visual artist, basically. Authors, most of my audience will write rather than do images. And also some of them would probably just not want ever to have their face anywhere. And I know you guys did a fun photo shoot and everything, but can you, you know, maybe talk about why images are so important for books, for marketing and for branding, I guess?
For sure. I mean, what people see, I know this is not a popular like idea or concept, and I totally get it and understand it for sure. But the truth of the matter is what people see will encourage their like first like ideas of what it is that they're seeing. Mm-hmm. So branding or visuals or whatever it may be are super important. And that's definitely how Kathleen and I have built our expertise, both in branding and in websites. So being very visual and having that importance be like top of mind for all of our client relationships and what it is that we do. But also like how we show up for things, what our houses look like. Like we're both just very, very visual people. So whenever we were thinking about this book, it wasn't just what is it going to say, but it was also what is it going to look like? Because you also have to understand that the people who are going to be buying this book are also very visual people. They're graphic designers, they're photographers, they're creative entrepreneurs who are also, for the most part, very visual. So for us, it wasn't just imagining what the book would say. It was also very deeply imagining what the book would look like. For us, it was creating a whole package of a book, not just the words that would go into it. So that was like, that was part of our book proposal process. It was part of the conversations that we were having with our publishing team. All of those things is like, this is not only going to be a beautiful sounding book, it's going to be a beautiful looking book as well. And so we did plan a very fantastic photo shoot in New Orleans, because part of that visualness was we wanted to have custom imagery that really portrayed sort of the look and feel that we like summon up whenever we think about what it means to be boss, and it's like working from anywhere and sort of also just enjoying the world around you. I mean, so many of us stay glued to our computer screens so terribly much that we forget what a leaf looks like. So we wanted to add some of those natural elements to the book as well. And we also wanted to do it in a place that's very important to us, and that's New Orleans. It's a place where we've done several of our vacations and we'll continue to do more of them. It's a place that has, you know, been part of my journey for well over a decade and a half now. And was just a place that we wanted to showcase and capture in this book, and the feeling that it gives us whenever we are there. So all of those things went into something as simple as a photo shoot. And we showed up and we did it, and we, you know, curated the photography. We had a really great photographer we were working with. And we think that what it has brought to the book is a little bit of extra soul. Like a little bit of extra like meaning behind it. And even if you don't know that the photos were taken in New Orleans, or who those people were, or why it was that we chose them, or whatever it may be, because we did get some models to come do it with us. Even if you don't know the like details of all of those things, you feel it. You feel that there's something extra about this book, and there's some extra intention and energy that went behind creating not only something that would be, you know, verbally meaningful, but something that would be like, that would touch you visually and that would make you, you know, want to be more boss, if I need to say it.
Oh no, I think that's, it's so interesting. You know, I do think that more authors need to look at imagery. So, I mean, obviously book covers are important, but I mean, the inside too.
Yeah, well, and I will also say, though, after embarking on this journey, Kathleen and I have more or less sworn to each other, I don't know that we'll actually stand by it for much longer, that we'll probably never do such a visual book ever again.
It does bring a lot, yeah.
It does. Like, the editing process for the visuals and, like, just the overall layout of the book was so much more intense than just, like, having a simple book that was printed, for sure. But I also think it was completely worth it. And in terms of, like, using ourselves, because I do want to touch on that for just a second, you know, the publisher really wanted to put our faces on it. Because Kathleen and I have built these like personal brands that are so connected to the podcast and the work that we do. They're like, well, obviously you're going to put your face on it. We're like, no, we're not. Like our faces are actually not going to go onto the cover of this book, because we want anyone to be able to pick up this book and see themselves in it, not only if they look like us. Yeah. So we were super conscious about not having our faces on the cover of the book. We are on the back cover, and we are on a couple of spreads on the inside. But that again is just sort of like, just sort of illustrating that like real people do this. Like, and granted, we were in a photo shoot in New Orleans, but we've also worked like that in New Orleans, where we had to strike a very careful balance about not putting ourselves in it too much, which Kathleen and I, you know, usually wouldn't mind. We're all over our website, all of these things, but this book, we wanted it to be significantly more universal. And we really wanted anyone to be able to see themselves in this place, working for themselves, taking control of their life, all of those things. So all of it was super intentional, super conscious, on like almost a painful level. But I think the product of it will speak for itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you mentioned control there. And I mean, you have the word indie in your business name. And, you know, you guys are very independent. And most of my audience are independent authors. But you guys chose to go with a traditional publisher with the book. So I wonder whether you could tell us your reasons, because I know you know people who also do it themselves. So why that choice?
Sure. That also was a very conscious choice, where we discussed it together and with experts, with, you know, book agents, with other authors. We spoke with anyone we could about the pros and cons of each of them. And whenever it came down to it, we really chose to go with a traditional publisher, because what we wanted to do was grow the reach of our brand. And we wanted, like, what we really wanted twofold. We needed the accountability and the deadlines. Because we've been talking about writing a book for years and it hadn't happened yet. We needed someone else there, like tapping their foot, telling us like deadline's coming. So we recognize that totally and like stepped up to the plate. And the second was distribution and the ability to reach more people. If we had published the book ourselves, we would have sold it to our current listener base, which would be great for sure. But that more or less would have been it. What we wanted to do with this book was spread this message that, you know, if you do these things, you can do whatever you want with more people than just the people who were already hearing that message. And that really was the underlying reason of why we decided to go with a traditional publisher, was that we wanted that expanded reach. And also because we're so used to doing everything ourselves, we kind of just like the idea of being able to write a book and hand it off and have someone else figure out all of those things, especially with systems already in place. So for once, we were willing to not DIY something.
And also, I do think it's important if you're going to do a very image heavy book, traditional publishing is much better in terms of the printing as well.
Yes. Yeah, I can't even imagine having figured that out. Because another thing too, because Kathleen and I are so like visually centered, the quality of the book and like the feel of the paper, like those were the kinds of things, like for us creating this book was creating an entire experience. And we knew that we would have more resources and we went with a traditional publisher.
I totally get it. And I think you guys made the right choice there, you know, for that printing. But I am interested because, of course, you know, publishers will do the printing, but they will want you to do the marketing. So how obviously you guys are used to doing personal branding type marketing, but how do you think the book marketing will be different to the marketing that you already do for your businesses? Because this is quite new for you guys, right?
It is. It's a different kind of long game. Is what we're really finding. So, you know, we're used to launching things and doing digital marketing campaigns and, you know, just making them do and like these little spurts, like every quarter we'll launch something or we sell our vacations once a year or whatever. So we're used to doing marketing. Like it's kind of a hobby. It's weird. We like it for the most part. But for this, we really see it as, you know, I've already drawn up the digital marketing campaign for the launch of this book and it's 8 weeks long. It's the longest marketing campaign I've ever done because we've never marketed anything for 8 weeks. And that's just like phase one. So in really thinking about how we're going to be long-term marketing this book for the next year or even 2 years, like how do we continue to leverage this thing that we've created and expand it to more and more audiences? So really the biggest thing for us is, or the biggest shift this is for us in terms of what we're used to doing, because we're super used to marketing things, to what this is really thinking about how we make a slow burn as opposed to that, like, you know, fast spark. We're used to doing fast sparks. This is going to be a super slow burn.
Oh no, it's really interesting. So, and of course, one of the things you'll be doing is lots of stuff on the podcast. And, you know, I really love your show. So can you just tell my listeners about your show and what they can expect on Being Boss, the podcast?
For sure. So we try to make our podcast super conversational. So if you're not down for conversational podcasts, it's not the place for you. It's super conversational where Kathleen and I, we're either talking together or with a guest around what it's like to be a living, working, creative entrepreneur. So what it's like to pour your soul into your work and then ask someone for money for it, or what it looks like to have work-life balance. We talk about like really like the down and dirty, like what it looks like to actually live and work in this way. And we don't sugarcoat things. Like Kathleen and I are known for being pretty raw and really open and vulnerable about the struggles, but also the successes, but also the struggles that come with the successes of what it looks like to live and work in this way. And so it's fun. I think the people who listen to it tend to have a good time. We get so many emails from people who say that it's like we're there doing the dishes with them, or we're with them in the car on, you know, their commute to their day job or whatever it is, where it's like sitting down at a cafe and listening in on some cool chicks having a conversation about what it's really like to live and work as a creative in the world and doing business along the way.
Yeah, and making money too. And I think that's really important. I think there are a lot of craft podcasts out there. But, you know, I think the money side, the ambition side, that's, I certainly get a lot out of your show. So keep doing it.
Will do. So the Being Boss book, or the book Being Boss.
Gorgeous. Take control
of, thank you. Which is Being Boss, Take Control of Your Work and Live Life on Your Own Terms, is now available for pre-order, except I think by the time this episode comes out, it'll be like the day before the book actually launches. You can buy your own copy wherever you like to buy books. And you can find out more about the book at beingboss.club/book. You can find all of our podcasts at beingboss.club or wherever you listen to podcasts. We're kind of everywhere.
Brilliant. Well, thanks so much for your time, Emily. That was great.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure chatting with you.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Emily today and that you got some great tips on creative business and co-writing. I certainly really enjoyed chatting to Emily, and you can also go and check out the Being Boss podcast. And I really like listening to Emily's accent. So it's well worth it for that reason alone. But she and Kathleen also discussed loads of stuff about running your own business. And also the book Being Boss is out now. So next week, I'll be doing a solo show on what I learned at the London Book Fair, including the challenges that authors are facing and what they're doing about it, plus my thoughts on blockchain for books. And I will be doing some definitions for those of you who've asked, and also mobile reading apps based on a session I attended with China Literature and Wattpad, which has definitely got me excited about that as a business model. So have a wonderful writing week, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.